My wife Kathy left me last year, right after our daughter Madison started college. Kathy's an extremely toxic person, so I'm much happier overall. But after the divorce, I felt less connected to Madison. I love Madison more than anything, but it became extremely clear that Kathy had convinced her that I was the reason for the divorce. I knew for a fact that Kathy badmouthed me to all our friends, so she must have done the same thing to our daughter. We still talk once a week, but there was definitely a growing distance between us, and I knew it was all because of Kathy. One weekend I was watching TV at home when I got a surprise call from Kathy. It was just after 10 at night, so I assumed that it was something serious. As soon as I answered the call, I heard Madison's voice, not Kathy's. She was whimpering and sounded terrified. "Please, Dad, you have to come help me. Come here now." I asked her what happened, but the call disconnected before she answered. What was going on? Why was Madison at Kathy's house when she should be in her dorms? I was horrified. Without thinking, I grabbed my keys and rushed out the door. I got in my car and started driving to Kathy's house. It was pouring rain, and I could barely see the road. My windshield wipers weren't working right. I knew I should have called 911 or called Kathy's house phone, but it was too late now. I had to concentrate on the road. When I was about halfway there, I slammed on my brakes. There was a huge tree blocking the road. It had fallen during the storm. I couldn't drive around it, so I turned off my engine and called Kathy's house. No one answered. Then I called her cell, the one Madison used. Still no answer. I was going to call 911 next, but someone pounded on my window. I jumped in my seat, heart racing. I saw a man in a hoodie staring at me through the glass. His face was completely in shadow. He looked like he was in trouble, but I didn't have time to help him, not when my daughter was in danger. I put the car in reverse and started to back out, so he pounded so hard in the window that I thought it was going to break. I stopped and rolled down the window just an inch. "Are you okay?" "I am," he said, pulling off his hood to see a normal-looking face. "But you seem trapped." I explained that I was on my way to check on my daughter, but the tree had fallen, blocking my way. He said he knew the area really well, and if I told him the address, he could show me how to get there on the side roads. I let out a sigh of relief. That was exactly what I needed. The man slid into the passenger's side and introduced himself as Marshall. I told him my ex-wife's address, and he started guiding me through all the dirt roads on the side of town. We took so many turns, I lost count. I didn't recognize the area at all. Kathy had moved pretty far out of the city after the divorce, and I think part of the reason she chose the area was that we would never run into each other. Eventually, Marshall told me to make a turn. I pulled the car onto a road that was so muddy, I didn't even think my car would make it out without getting stuck. "How much further?" I asked Marshall. He looked left and right. Aside from an old barn, there was no building in sight. Then, he pulled out a gun and pointed it at me. "Get out of the car." Obviously, I'd never looked down the barrel of a gun before. I had no experience with any kind of violence. This was the scariest single moment of my life, but I didn't feel scared at all. All I thought about was Madison. "What did you do to my daughter?" He looked at me like I was crazy. "Your daughter. I won't let you leave the car until you tell me she's okay." I didn't care about getting carjacked. I mean, it would be great, the car was replaceable, but Madison wasn't. He pressed the gun to my forehead. "I don't have your daughter." I still didn't move. He cocked his gun, his expression unhinged. I knew he was desperate. I knew he'd kill me if I didn't cooperate. But all I cared about was Madison. "Your gun isn't even loaded," I told him. He laughed. Then he pulled the gun away from my forehead to show me that he was serious. That was the opportunity I needed. We were still in the car, so I didn't have a lot of room. But in the tiny space, I grabbed his hands and twisted the gun towards his own face and squeezed. I wasn't expecting the gunshot to be loud, but I think one of my eardrums popped. But the man was dead. He slumped forward in his seat, his face reduced to mush. I reached into his pockets to find any evidence where this man was from and what he had done to Madison. I couldn't find anything. Instead, I restarted the car and drove back to the main road. By then, the fallen tree had been removed from the street. With the dead body still in the passenger seat, I drove straight to my ex's house. It took 5 minutes. I jumped out of the car and raced to the front door. I didn't bother knocking. I just ran inside. Instantly filled with relief, Madison was sitting on the couch watching a movie. She was completely fine. "Dad? What happened? Why are you covered in blood?" I didn't answer her question. Instead, I asked her why she was at her mom's house. "Oh," she answered casually. "My classes got canceled, so I thought I'd come over. Mom's asleep in the other room if you want to wake her up." I did not want to wake up Kathy. "Why did you call me asking for help?" Madison just laughed. "Oh, it's this ongoing trend these days. I had to give it a try. It's a TikTok challenge. All my friends with divorced parents are doing it. I was trying to parent trap you, but it doesn't matter. Why are you covered in ketchup?" Without saying anything else, I walked out of the house and drove straight to the police station, where I had a lot of explaining to do. I'm okay now. I didn't get arrested or anything, but I'm still so angry at my daughter.
I stood under the flickering neon lights of the bus station, the hum of the fluorescent tubes overhead buzzing like a nest of angry bees. I glanced at my phone, hoping for a message from my friend, but the screen remained stubbornly dark. The station was nearly empty, save for a few tired souls huddled on the benches, waiting for buses that seemed as elusive as my friend. I leaned against the wall by the payphones, the cold metal of the ancient device pressing into my back. It was one of those nights that made you question your choices. Why had I agreed to meet here of all places? The air was thick with the smell of stale urine and fast food, a scent that clung to everything and everyone. I checked my phone again. Nothing. Just as I was about to give up and leave, a figure shuffled into my peripheral vision. He was a homeless man, his clothes a patchwork of worn fabric and grime. His hair hung in greasy tangles around his face, and his eyes were dark hollows. He moved towards the payphones, his steps slow and deliberate. I stiffened, hoping he would pass by without incident. But he didn't. Instead, he picked up the receiver of the phone closest to me and brought it to his ear. He didn't dial a number, he just stood there, staring at me through the dirty glass of the phone booth. His gaze was unsettling, like he could see something I couldn't. For a moment, I considered moving away, but curiosity rooted me to the spot. The man didn't speak or make any move to engage with the phone. He just stood there, the receiver pressed to his ear, his eyes locked on mine. Minutes ticked by, each one stretching longer than the last. The air around us seemed to thicken, and a chill ran down my spine. I tried to ignore him, but his unwavering stare made it impossible. I cleared my throat, shifting uncomfortably. "You okay, man?" I asked, my voice sounding too loud in the stillness. He didn't respond. He didn't even blink. I glanced around, hoping someone else would notice, but the few people in the station were oblivious, lost in their own worlds. After what felt like an eternity, the man finally moved. He placed the receiver back on the hook with a slow, deliberate motion. Then he turned and walked away, his steps echoing in the empty station. I let out a breath I hadn't realized I was holding, my heart pounding in my chest. What the hell had that been about? I was about to text my friend, telling them I was leaving, when my phone buzzed. It was a message from an unknown number. "Thank you for your patience. The call has been received." I stared at the screen, a sense of unease creeping over me. The call? What call? I hadn't made any calls. The homeless man's face flashed in my mind, his eerie silent vigil at the payphone. I typed a reply, my fingers trembling. "Who is this?" Almost immediately, the response came. "We apologize for any inconvenience. Your participation was necessary." My heart raced as I tried to make sense of the messages. Participation? In what? I looked around, half expecting the homeless man to reappear, but the station was as empty as before. I decided it was time to leave. I couldn't shake the feeling that I had been part of something beyond my understanding, something dark and unsettling. As I made my way to the exit, my phone buzzed again. Thank you for your patience. Your friend will arrive soon. I froze, the hairs on the back of my neck standing up. I turned back towards the payphones, a shiver running down my spine. There, standing where the homeless man had been, was my friend. They looked confused, glancing around as if trying to find me. I rushed over, relief flooding through me. Hey, what happened? I've been waiting forever. My friends shook their head. I don't know. I was on my way and then everything went blank. Next thing I know, I'm here. I didn't understand it, but as we left the bus station together, the unsettling feeling began to fade. Maybe it was a strange coincidence, or maybe something beyond my comprehension had occurred. Either way, I was just glad my friend was safe.
I always thought marriage was about partnership, about sharing burdens and joys equally. But as the year dragged on, my perception of it shattered like glass under a sledgehammer. It started with a series of unfortunate events. Surgery in January, followed by thousands of dollars in car repairs. College consumed my days, and I worked full time to keep us afloat. Anxiety gnawed at my insides, forcing me onto medication. Amidst all this chaos, housework became an unbearable weight. I did everything, cleaning, cooking, laundry, while my husband blissfully ignored the messes he created. 2 weeks ago, I made a decision. I would stop cleaning up after him. If he was content living in squalor, then so be it. I would clean only after myself. Trash I produced was thrown away. My dishes were washed. My laundry was done. His mess, however, was left untouched. Today was no different. My husband slept until 1 p.m., despite having to be at work at 8. Meanwhile, I had worked from 8:30 to 6:30. When I got home, the kitchen table was a disaster. The trash hadn't been taken out, despite his promise to do so. The bag of takeout he left on the floor had been torn apart by the cats. Clean clothes and towels were strewn across the ground. I was livid. I cleaned my own messes, put away my belongings, and washed only my clothes. His laundry remained on the floor, where he had carelessly tossed it. Dried up cat puke, 3 piles of it, dotted the floor. Remnants from weeks ago that he ignored as he stepped over them. Usually, I would have cleaned them, but not anymore. I decided to see how long it would take him to address the mess. I guessed it would be another week or two, even though he had the next 2 days off. Oddly enough, my anxiety lessened. With only my own mess to manage, I had time to relax. The house was dirtier, but I didn't care. If we each cleaned up after ourselves and shared household duties, life would be simpler. He came home after a 5-hour shift and asked if I wanted to go out to eat. He didn't know that there was chicken thawing in the fridge that needed to be cooked, and he certainly didn't offer to cook it. Instead, he retreated to the game room. I waited, thinking he'd notice the laundry or the clutter on the table. He didn't. He didn't think about mailing the rent check or making dinner, even though I'd worked 9 hours and was dealing with my second period of the month. The resentment bubbled within me, a boiling cauldron of anger and frustration. I felt trapped in a prison of neglect and indifference. My once loving husband had become a stranger, a careless, oblivious man who took everything for granted. One evening, as I lay in bed, an idea crept into my mind. It was dark and insidious, but it took root and grew. If he wouldn't notice the everyday messes, perhaps he wouldn't notice something more sinister. Over the next few days, I began to plan. I moved through the house with purpose, but my husband remained oblivious. He continued his routine of work and gaming, never questioning my newfound calm or the strange glint in my eye. I started small. I bought a set of rubber gloves and a few bottles of bleach. I disposed of the cat puke, scrubbing the floor clean, but I left the gloves and bleach conspicuously in the corner. He didn't ask about them. My opportunity came one Saturday morning. My husband was asleep, as usual, while I cleaned the kitchen. I found a sharp knife, the kind that could cut through bone with ease, and hid it under the sink. I made sure to leave no traces, no fingerprints. I felt a cold, calculating detachment as I prepared. That night, I suggested we watch a movie together, something we hadn't done in months. He agreed, surprised by my sudden affection. As the credits rolled, I offered to make us a late-night snack. He smiled, oblivious to the darkness in my heart. I returned with two glasses of wine. He sipped his without hesitation. Within minutes, he was unconscious. The sedative I'd slipped into his drink worked quickly. I dragged his limp body to the bathroom, my muscles burning with effort. I placed him in the bathtub, his head lulling to one side. The knife glinted under the harsh bathroom light. I felt a rush of adrenaline as I picked it up. I thought about the months of neglect, the endless chores, the piles of cat puke. My anger surged, blinding me to the horror of what I was about to do. With a steady hand, I made the first cut. Blood poured from the wound, staining the white tub. I worked methodically, my mind detached from my actions. The sound of the blade slicing through flesh and bone was sickening, but I didn't stop. I couldn't stop. Hours passed. I was drenched in sweat and blood, my body aching from the effort. I looked down at what remained of my husband, now unrecognizable. I felt a strange sense of satisfaction, a twisted sense of justice. I had freed myself from his neglect, his indifference. I cleaned the bathroom meticulously, scrubbing away every trace of blood. I disposed of the knife and the rubber gloves, careful not to leave any evidence. I packed the remains into black trash bags and carried them to the basement, where I hid them behind old boxes and forgotten junk. For the next few days, I lived in a state of surreal calm. My husband's absence was hardly noticed by anyone. He had few friends, no close family. At work, they assumed he'd taken off without notice, something he'd done before. I carried on with my routine, maintaining the facade of a grieving wife. But the calm didn't last. Guilt and paranoia began to eat away at me. I saw shadows moving in the corners of my vision, heard whispers in the dead of night. I felt his presence everywhere, a cold, accusing gaze that never left me. One night, as I lay in bed, I heard a noise from the basement, a soft, shuffling sound, like someone moving among the boxes. My heart pounded in my chest as I crept downstairs, clutching a flashlight. The basement was dark and musty, the air thick with dust. I swept the beam of light across the room, my breath coming in short, ragged gasps. The black trash bags were untouched, but the noise continued. I moved closer, my hands trembling. The sound grew louder, more distinct. It was a whisper. A voice I recognized. "You can't hide from me," it said. "You'll never be free." I screamed, dropping the flashlight. The basement plunged into darkness. I stumbled back, tripping over the debris, my mind racing with fear. I knew then that I could never escape the weight of my actions. My husband's neglect had driven me to madness, and now I was trapped in a nightmare of my own making. Days turned into weeks. The whispers never stopped. The shadows never left. I became a prisoner in my own home, tormented by the ghost of my husband. My mind unraveled, the line between reality and nightmare blurring until I could no longer tell the difference. One evening, unable to bear the torment any longer, I made my way to the basement one final time. The darkness enveloped me, the air thick with the scent of decay. I found the black trash bags, untouched, and knelt beside them.
"I'm sorry,"
I whispered, tears streaming down my face.
"I'm so sorry."
The whispers grew louder, a cacophony of accusations and condemnation. I clutched my head, the guilt and madness consuming me. In a final act of desperation, I reached for the knife that I had hidden under a pile of rags. With a swift, final motion, I ended my torment. The darkness embraced me, the whispers fading into silence. I felt a cold, eerie peace as I slipped away, knowing that I could never escape the weight of my actions. In the end, my husband's neglect had destroyed us both. The house, once a home, became a tomb of madness and despair. And I, a ghost trapped in the darkness, paid the ultimate price for my descent into horror.
My mom took me to Starbucks to have a private chat. She didn't tell me what it was about, but I knew that she wanted to tell me something serious. I got there first and drank my iced tea, nervous about what my mom was going to tell me. When she finally arrived, she seemed perfectly fine. She ordered a coffee for herself and then sat across from me. She smiled and asked me about my day. I told her that I was fine and everything was normal. "Good to hear," she said. "Unfortunately, I have some bad news." She went on to tell me that she was planning to divorce my father. She wanted to tell me in person before she filed the paperwork. I was absolutely floored. My parents had been married for nearly 30 years, and they always seemed so happy together. I never saw them argue. I asked her what had changed, and she said, "Sometimes people grow apart." There was obviously something she wasn't telling me. I'm 26, but at that moment, I felt like a little kid. I didn't want my parents to break up. I wanted to argue with her, tell her to reconsider. But I stopped myself. It wasn't my decision to make. I asked her, "Does Dad know?" "Oh, he knows." The tone of her voice proved that there was definitely something she wasn't telling me. "Okay, well, I love you both, and I'm sorry this has to happen," I said. I didn't know what else to say. We stayed at Starbucks for a couple more minutes, but I really didn't have anything else to talk about. She thanked me for understanding, and then I left. I didn't do anything for the rest of the day. I was too distracted. Honestly, I was mostly worried about my dad. Unlike a lot of families, my mom was the breadwinner, while Dad was the stay-at-home spouse who took care of me and my sister. What was he going to do after the divorce? He hadn't had a real job in decades, so he'd have to maybe work at some fast food restaurant or something. The next day, I called in sick to work. I still wasn't in the right headspace, and I needed to see both my parents face to face. Maybe then I'd hear the full story. I called Mom to say that I was coming over, but she didn't answer. A little before noon, I drove out to their house. Both their cars were still in the driveway. I knocked on the door, but no one answered, so I let myself in. That's when I saw my dad's body lying in a pool of blood on the living room floor. He had a bullet hole in the middle of his forehead. I screamed. From the other room, I heard my mom's voice. "Jane, is that you?" I followed her voice to the bathroom. She was sitting on the floor, trembling. "Is he gone?" At first, I thought she was talking about my dad, but then I realized she was talking about someone else who murdered my dad. Chills ran down my spine. The killer might still be in the house. I ran inside the bathroom and locked the door behind me. "Tell me what happened." Mom breathlessly explained that Dad had gotten mixed up with some shady people. She didn't know all the details, but she told me that he owed them a lot of money. That was the reason why she wanted to divorce him. She said that she was in the bathroom when she heard the man come in to argue with my dad. Then she heard the gunshot. I love my father so much. I really couldn't believe that he'd get mixed up with all these criminals. It was just too much to process. I pulled out my phone and called 911. The dispatcher said that they would send someone right away. I begged her to hurry, because I didn't know if the killer was still here. "Just stay where you are and keep the doors locked," the lady on the phone told me. That was the best she could do. I hung up the phone and then sat next to Mom on the floor. I wrapped her in a big hug and told her how sorry I was. Even though she was planning to divorce Dad, I knew that she still loved him. I could feel her trembling arms. We waited for the cops to arrive. I glanced at the door, trying to hear any noises or footsteps outside. The house was completely quiet. "I can't believe he's dead," she muttered. At least she didn't have to see his body. She heard the gunshots, but she didn't have that terrible image in her head. Dad lying dead on the ground. It was all I could think about. "He had his problems," Mom continued. "But no one deserves to get shot in the head like that." I instantly pulled away from her. "What did you say?" She looked at me confused. "You didn't see what happened, right? So how do you know he was shot in the head?" Mom's face went instantly blank. "Oops," she said. I jumped to my feet.
"You?"
Slowly, she stood up as well. "Damn it, Jane. You're too smart for your own good." She stepped closer, her face blank, and placed one hand on my shoulder. "You're not going to tell the police, are you?" I didn't answer. I could barely breathe. "He was going to take everything in the divorce," she said. "I couldn't let him do that." She squeezed my shoulder hard enough to hurt. "Mom," I said very slowly, "where's the gun?" "Disposed of," she said. "Don't worry, I won't hurt you." I didn't believe that. If she could murder her husband of 30 years, what would stop her from killing me too? I pushed her away. "Please, Dane, it'd be so much easier if you just play along." I opened the bathroom door and ran out. But Mom surged forward and grabbed me by the waist. I was surprised at how strong she was, and she shoved me to the ground. Desperate, I grabbed a lamp from the table next to me and held it up as a weapon. If she tried to attack me again, I would slam it into her. "Stay back," I screamed. That's when the front door opened and three policemen charged inside. Mom looked over towards them and screamed, "Help, she wants to kill me too." The policemen pointed their guns at me. "Drop the weapon," one of them ordered. "It's not me," I tried to explain. "Drop the weapon." I put the lamp back on the ground, and the cops rushed out to handcuff me. I'm in a holding cell now, waiting to tell my side of the story. I know that Mom spent a lot of time covering her tracks, but I pray there's something she forgot, something that'll prove that I'm innocent. For now, all I can do is wait.
It was a humid summer evening. The kind where the sun hangs lazily in the sky, refusing to set. I was lounging on my couch, scrolling mindlessly through social media, when my phone buzzed. It was a text from my friend Jake. "Guess who I saw getting off the train today?" I paused, my mind flickering through a Rolodex of faces from our past. We had both graduated high school in 2007, and over the years, the memories of those we once knew had faded into a distant blur. But something about Jake's message felt different, almost as if it carried a strange energy with it. My fingers hovered over the keyboard, and without really thinking, I type the name Mark Hastings. Almost immediately, Jake replied, "No way! How did you know?" A chill ran down my spine. I hadn't thought about Mark in years. We were never friends, just acquaintances who shared a few classes. I hadn't talked to him, nor had Jake, since graduation. I couldn't explain why his name had come to mind so quickly, but it did, and the accuracy of my guess was unsettling. That night, as I lay in bed, I couldn't shake the feeling of unease. My thoughts swirled around Mark and the odd intuition that had led me to guess his name. Sleep eluded me, and I found myself tossing and turning until the early hours of the morning. When I finally drifted off, my dreams were filled with fragmented memories of high school and fleeting images of Mark's face. The next day, I met up with Jake at our favorite coffee shop. The place was buzzing with the usual crowd of college students and young professionals, but amidst the chatter, our conversation took on a more serious tone. "I still can't believe you guessed it was Mark. What made you think of him?" I shrugged, trying to appear nonchalant. "Honestly, I have no idea. It just came to me." Jake raised an eyebrow. "Huh. Maybe you're psychic," he joked, but there was a glint of curiosity in his eyes. Over the next few days, I decided to do some digging, partly out of curiosity and partly to put my mind at ease. I found Mark's LinkedIn profile, and what I found was surprising. Mark had moved back to our hometown recently and was working at a local tech startup. The more I learned, the more memories of high school resurfaced. Mark had always been quiet, almost invisible in the crowded hallways. Yet there was something about him that now seemed significant. One evening, I received another text from Jake. "You won't believe this. I ran into Mark again. We talked a bit, and he wants to catch up with us. What do you think?" A mix of apprehension and curiosity welled up inside me. "Sure, why not?" I replied, trying to mask my unease. The following weekend, we arranged to meet at a park. When Mark walked in, I was struck by how much he had changed. He seemed more confident, carrying an air of quiet assurance. We exchanged pleasantries, and soon the conversation flowed easily, filled with stories and laughter. As the night wore on, I couldn't help but ask, "Mark, do you ever feel like things happen for a reason? Like there's some kind of connection that we can't explain?" Mark looked at me thoughtfully. "I do, actually. Funny you should mention that. When I saw Jake on the train, I had this strange feeling, like I was meant to reconnect with you guys." Looking back, I realized that life has a way of weaving paths in mysterious ways. Sometimes it takes a seemingly random guess to uncover the threads that connect us all. And in those moments, we find that the universe has a way of bringing us exactly where we need to be.